Good afternoon. We're going to get started even though we don't have a forum present because we have a grand total of 5 bills and we're going to end at 4. So I would like to first call on Representative Atkins to present House File 3589. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. I am actually nowhere near as good-looking as the true author of this bill, Representative Madore, nor am I anywhere near as bright.
Don't sell yourself short.
I hopefully have the ability to phone a friend. Is Ms. McCormick in the room? Oh, good. This is, as I understand it, Mr. Chair, this is a purely technical bill. It's to bring some conformity between certain state and federal statutes, eliminate some conflicts between existing Minnesota statutes, provide state patrol with authority to enforce out-of-service regulations, and keep some unsafe drivers off the road. And finally, it requires commercial drivers to report withdrawals and convictions to their employers, who can then prevent them from driving illegally, thus enhancing public safety, of course. All I'm aware of, Mr. Chair, are supporters. No one has contacted anybody that I'm aware of in opposition to it, and obviously once you get to a quorum, Mr. Chair, we'd appreciate your support. With that, I do have some brief testimony and the ability to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Representative Atkins and Ms. McCormick. Welcome back to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And this legislation is very important to Driver and Vehicle Services. As you may remember, you may have seen some information in the press. Driver and Vehicle Services, every 3 years, has an audit by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to ensure that our policies and our administration of all programs that involve commercial drivers are in compliance with federal law. And there were several policy issues that came up that they said the audit findings in August of 2007 stated that we needed to ensure that our statutory language was changed so that it was in compliance with federal regulations. And so a great deal of this bill has to do with us coming into compliance, either referencing the federal regulations or coming into compliance and changing our policies or our regulations so that we are ensured that we are in sync with federal law regarding administering driver commercial driver licensing administration and enforcement. And as part of this legislation, we have met with the Department of Transportation as well as with the State Patrol to ensure that they are supportive of the changes that we have made, because some of those changes do impact their regulations as well, and we have their support. And I know that we have Ken Urquhart here from the State Patrol, and I think we also have a representative from MnDOT as well if there are any questions. Most of the language, though, is very technical. I think you received a handout that lays out the provisions. I can certainly go through it if you want me to, or if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. McCormick. We're still waiting on our quorum, even though I will still move House File 3589 for consideration for our omnibus policy bill, which will be before the Finance Committee, the full Finance Committee. But this is probably a good random sample of committee members. If you do you have questions to date, or would you like to hear from anyone else for erstwhile on-time members who are here?
Mr. Chair, I just realized how missing a member we were until right this minute.
Yeah. Because I'm certainly okay with your presentation.
Well, Mr. Chair, then just a personal plea that I would make. My understanding is that whenever Representative Madore has presented a bill, that Ms. McCormick has testified in favor of, they have passed every single one of them.
Yeah.
I have to sit next to Representative Bedore on the floor. And so if this hasn't passed, it's going to make for a very long legislative session. I mean, so if you all would just keep that in mind when you take this into consideration, I'd appreciate that from a personal
okay.
standpoint.
Well, I'm confident that we'll be able to move this forward, but we can't right now. But we will once we get a quorum. And I know Ms. McCormick is going to be in the room potentially, or Mr. Alula. I don't know if either if he can talk to this as well, or if you'll
be
hanging around.
I'll still be in the room.
Okay.
Larry will be the testifier, but I'll be here as well. So
okay.
I'm glad to take questions when more members come if there's any more questions.
So, Mr. Chair Atkins, we will, if there are other additional questions about this, we'll have Ms. McCormick here, but I'm sure that we'll be able to move this along.
Thank you.
I'm confident.
That's your kind way of saying don't come back.
It's my kind way of saying you're always welcome, and Ms. Representative Bedore has a very good spokesperson in you.
Thank you on my own behalf, but also on behalf of Representative Bedore.
Okay. Thank you very much. So what we'll do is we'll hold House File 3589 until I think we just need one more person, and we will now see if Representative Nelson is available. He's got the next two bills. I will move House File 2966 for also inclusion in our omnibus transportation policy bill, Roman numeral 2, for the session, and that will also go before the full committee prior to the bill deadline. So, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. Okay, this is a technical bill, and it's, I'll let Larry hold it. Anyway, it basically talks about hospitals and being able to have vehicles that are unmarked, have regular plates on them, and it's basically a technical that similar to an unmarked police car. I guess is the way I look at it. So,
welcome to the committee, Mr. Olola. You can
chair
member for the record.
My name is Larry Olola. I'm the Vehicle Services Program Director with Driver Vehicle Services. This deal has two separate sections to it. The first portion, the issue was brought to us. We have a group that meets with law enforcement personnel, and as they said, there's some confusion. As a general rule, most vehicles that have taxis that have license plates on them have to have a marking on the side indicating the agency that's operating that particular vehicle. There are a couple of exceptions, hospitals and state hospitals, and then also social service agencies that are dealing with vulnerable adults, mentally ill people, and this type of thing. Are allowed to have vehicles with taxi guns placed on them without the markings on the side. This becomes confusing for law enforcement agencies because, as a general rule, they're looking for the markings on the side of the vehicle and they're wondering why a vehicle is running without the with taxi gun placed without the markings on the side. So what the first portion of this bill does is it allows for those two exceptions, the state hospitals and the social service agencies to operate the vehicles like they are now, but they aren't required to have the taxis in place on them. We would allow them to have regular license plates, and then they would not have the markings on the side. They'd still be paying the tax exempt rate, but they would not be required to have the tax exempt license plates on the vehicle. The second portion of the bill deals with the placement of license plates. What's become somewhat common is the placement of a license plate, especially on motorcycles, at an angle. So the license plate is not a horizontal, but being mounted vertically on the side of the motorcycle and at different locations. And so what the second portion of this bill does is requires the display of a license plate both to the rear and then also on other vehicles be done in such a way so that the license plate is horizontal, so that the numbers are facing out, and it's right side up, so they're not upside down. It's just based on the display of the license plate.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Olola. Any questions for committee members? House File 2966. Any closing comments from the author?
I think you covered it well.
Well, we do have a quorum now, and so I would like to let's do House File 2966 first. All those in favor signify by saying, I'll renew, actually, my motion to House File 2966. Oh, you want to move it? It's fine.
I can move it.
Finance Committee.
I move this to the Finance Committee.
Okay. Transportation Finance for inclusion in the Omnibus Policy Bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion prevails. And then I will move House File 3589, the same motion for inclusion in the Omnibus Policy Bill that will be before the full Transportation Finance Committee. This is the Medor legislation presented by Representative Atkins. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion prevails. And then finally, I'd like to see if Representative Earhart can move our minutes from February 22nd.
Don't move.
Or, I'm sorry, 7th. Excuse me. February 27th.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. The motion prevails. And so we are now down to our Roman numeral 5 on the agenda, House File 2873. And same author and same testifier.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and the committee. Before we get started, I'd like to move this bill again to Transportation Finance. Is that where we want to go again?
Yes, and this will also be for our
Omnibus policy bill.
This is going to be the Mike Nelson omnibus policy.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get started, I also have been informed that I have to do an oral amendment on this bill.
Okay.
On line 1.7, after paragraph where it says parentheses E, that's a mistake, or it should have been parentheses D, as in dog.
Okay, so the oral amendment would be to delete E and insert D on line 1.7. Okay. All those in favor of the author's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. And now I think we have the bill before us in the way you'd like it, Representative Nelson.
And I'll again hand it over to Larry and Nate.
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Olola.
Mr. Chair, members, again, for the record, Larry Olola with Driver Vehicle Services. This bill deals with intrastate carriers, and what we're doing is trying to address what we believe was the original intent of the bill. Upon renewal of registration, if you are traveling within Minnesota and operating a commercial vehicle, essentially we're looking at vehicles in excess of 10,000 pounds, you're required to supply a federal DOT number. What we find, however, is that there are some individuals who have vehicles, for instance, recreational vehicles. There are also governmental agencies that operate vehicles. That the intent of this bill was not to address those type of people. If you have an RV, you shouldn't have to apply for a DOT number. One of the things that was skipped, however, in the bill was the interstate travel of buses. So it includes buses, but it takes out governmental agency vehicles, it takes out personal vehicles, and that type of thing. And so that's what the intent is and what we're addressing in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Olola. I have just a very quick question. Why would you have the determination by the commissioner as opposed to the registrar?
I believe that's a standardization of language that we're going through in the commissioner, rather than the commissioner was looked at as the registrar of motor vehicles. I believe it's a standardization of language.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of either Representative Nelson or Mr. Olola? Okay. Well, Representative Nelson, renew your motion to pass the bill as amended.
As amended to Transportation Finance.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails. And we have now, we're 3-for-3 in bills going on to the policy bill today. And Representative Eakin has perfect timing. It's one of those days that things seem to be moving along at the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Members.
If I could
Sure, welcome to the committee, Representative Eakin. And Terry Eakin, very good to see you.
Yes, good to see you too. And somebody could move my
bill. I'll move House File 2372, and this would be our same motion for inclusion in our omnibus policy bill, but we will be moving it to the full Transportation Finance Committee chaired by Representative Leader.
Okay, sounds good. And I also have a delete all amendment.
Okay, that looks like it's the DE1.
Yes.
So I will move the DE1 amendment. Do you have any, want to quickly explain it?
Just made a couple of changes. Just the original bill was for semi-annual registration. This one actually is for quarterly. It just inserts it into existing law where there's already quarterly registration for farm vehicles.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Chair Eakin concerning the DE1 amendment? Okay. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. And we now have House File 2372 as amended before.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this is a bill that would allow for quarterly registration of trailers over 15,000 pounds and also quarterly registration for semi-tractors. Inserted into the portion of law where it allows for quarterly registration of farm trucks and trailers there. So this is just extending already existing law that already applies to farm vehicles to individuals who are using trailers just seasonally or using semi-tractors seasonally. Not unlike farmers do. And I know it's already allowed for not just farms, but also for businesses. I know Ada Feed and Seed, they register their vehicles quarterly. I'm not sure if it's because they're associated with farming in some way, but so this is already a practice that extends even beyond the farming community. It came to me as a result of a former farmer. He's retired now, but he still works on antique tractors, and he brings these tractors to parades during the summer. And he hauls them on a gooseneck trailer, and he hooks that up to a semi-tractor, and he has to pay registration fees for both the tractor and also for the trailer. And it amounts to, I know it's over $400 that he has to pay, and he only uses it just a few months out of the year. So I was wondering if he could have the same privilege that the farmers do, since he only uses it seasonally. So if you have any questions.
Thank you, Representative Eakin. Any questions? Representative Eakin, yes. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if Public Safety has any opinion on this.
Would this be a Ms. McCormick question or a Mr. Olala question? Okay. Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, without seeing the amendments, we had looked at it at the initial bill. This certainly is different than what was originally proposed. The process of doing a quarterly farm registration is somewhat of a labor-intensive, a manual process. I don't know what we would look at in the future of being able to streamline this a little bit, maybe doing it electronically. There's a possible fiscal impact to this too with the loss of registration. One option that is available now to carriers like this is that they could reduce their registration. Somebody who's registering with a gross weighted vehicle is able to register or reduce their registration to 1.25 times their empty weight. So essentially they can pay a lower rate for the months that they are not using the vehicle. They can do that one time during the year for a refund. So there's a provision to reduce the amount of tax liability currently, even for people who have a full registration on the truck tractor. However, I don't know. We'd have to take a look and see what the figures are to see what impact it would have. So,
well, President Eakin, maybe as this bill travels along, it would be helpful to see if we can accomplish your goals and those of the DVS can feel a little more at ease with it. I think it might be relatively easy to work out some of those issues. Would you be amenable to that?
Sure, I'd be more than willing to work with them.
Okay. Well, Representative Ruth, thank you for bringing this to our attention via the DVS. So, we'll probably be marking up this bill towards the end of, it looks like the 13th, so about another week or so. And if you guys can meet and maybe come up with some additional amending language, that would be helpful. But we'll move it along today in hopes that the DVS concerns can be addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments from members? Okay, well, then with that, I'll renew our motion to have House File 2372 pass as amended for inclusion in the omnibus policy bill before the Transportation Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We have one more bill before us today, and again, perfect timing, Chairman Bill. There's a lot of chairs here today, so. Provisional driver's license. With a little northern flavor, huh? So I'll move your bill, Representative Dill. This would be needing to go to the Public Safety Committee, and I'm still trying to figure out whether that would then travel to the floor or come back for our bill. My sense is that you'll probably have to... Oh. We'll move it along to Public Safety. It'll be the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and then I have the A1 amendment that I get the bill in the shape that I... would like it to be as it travels, so if we
yes.
can take under consideration the A1 amendment.
Okay, I will, but actually I just want to, I stand a little corrected. We cannot, as much as the chair would like to move bills directly out of this committee to other committees, because we are a subcommittee, we'll actually have to go to Representative Leader's full finance committee and then on to public safety. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, that's Representative Leader is a wonderful person, and I'm glad to have it being sent to his committee.
Okay. So, any questions about the A1 amendment, members? I will move the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The bill that you have before you today comes actually from Mr. Zahn. Mr. Zahn has come down from Ely today to testify on the bill. I'll just very quickly run through the bill. It ups the number of hours required for classroom training from 30 to 60, as I recall, and ups the driver's training from 6 to 10 behind the wheel. That's in starting on line 1.17. requires that a person taking the instruction present a logbook, much like a pilot would have to keep of the training, and rather than a person stating that they, like a flight instructor who would sign off in a logbook, they're attesting. If you look on line 2.8, they're attesting to the fact, because this makes it a misdemeanor to make a false statement that you participated in the training that is stated in the logbook. And then it also talks on line 2.19 that if a person approving the application falsifies an entry, then that's what I'm talking about in terms that they are in a logbook or a schedule certified by the person that they're guilty of a misdemeanor. It also, in the last pages of the last page of the bill, page 3, starting on line 3.5, it says that if a person gets a non-crash related violation during the time they're holding a provisional driver's license, that they then would not be able to get a driver's license until they reach the age of 18. That is essentially the bill, and I'd like, Mr. Chairman, if we could, Mr. Zahn is here to introduce himself, and for him to explain his background in this particular subject area, and also why he believes that this is necessary, and I want you to tell
about your granddaughter as well.
Ms. Well, Chairman, thank you very much, Mrs. Dunn. Welcome to the committee, and thanks for traveling all the way from Ely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Approximately 5 years ago, will be 5 years in June, my granddaughter had just in May had turned 16, got her driver's license. In June, she was in a crash and was killed. The most they could figure out is that she got distracted. She went over the lane to the left side. A large sign truck was coming out of Ely. And this happened only less than a quarter mile out of Ely. And evidently she reacted, pulled it back to the right on her side of the road. Also the sign truck, instead of going off to the right like he was trained, but then who knows, you know, in a situation what they're going to do. He also went to the left and pinned her up against the rocks. And she was killed immediately, instantly. Now, that I was a driver's training instructor up until that time for 5 years. And I was, in that very same day or day before that, I was priding myself in all of my students that I had up until that time. We didn't have a fatality, and first one was my granddaughter. I contacted Mr. Dill, and I said, something needs to be done, because I know that I'm doing 30 hours in the classroom and 6 hours behind the wheel with a student is not enough. Even though their parents are charged to give them, under the law right now, 30 hours behind the wheel, and 10 of those have to be at night, there is no way that that can be verified. There's no way that we know whether these 15, 16-year-old kids are getting this behind-the-wheel training, because there's no documentation. The parents sign off on it before they can take the test. When the tester asks, you had your hours, and the parents say, yeah, they have. But I find that a lot of the parents are afraid of their kids, and they go ahead and either that or they just don't take the time to give these kids proper training. Now, in Ely especially, under the law, I could only give them 2 hours behind the wheel. So if I wanted to give them four-lane highway training, I'd have to go to Virginia. That means an hour over and an hour back. There is no training on four-lane roads like you can get down here. No on-ramps, off-ramps, or any of that thing. So the kids in Ely then are at a little bit of a disadvantage. But then it's up to the parents to get them over, get them on these four-lane roads, get them on the freeways down here to give them this training. Again, they don't do it. And I don't know if that was the case with my granddaughter or not. Whether she had all of, she did get her 6 hours behind the wheel with me. She did get her 30 hours in the classroom. Beyond that, when she turned 16, she took her driver's test and passed. Now, we don't have it in the bill, but the driver's trainers cannot fail or pass these kids for the classroom or the behind the wheel. The only thing they're required to do is give them the 30 hours in the class and the 6 hours behind the wheel. There is no passing grade, which is something else that may need to be looked at in the future. I just feel at 16 years of age, most kids are not mature enough to get out on these highways and drive without some extensive training. There are some that are very good, but for the most part, I think they need more training. I'd even go so far as to say move the age up to 17 before they're allowed a driver's license. Thank you. I don't have any.
No, I'm so sorry to hear about your granddaughter. And Mr. Zahn and Chairman Dill, this is the third bill, I believe, that we have heard already this short session dealing with issues or related issues in terms of provisional licenses and driver training. So clearly, this is you know, something that's on the minds of many people, and I personally hope that the session we can take action on this. The big front page story in the Star Tribune a couple of Sundays ago about teen driving, and so this is clearly an issue that we ought to be addressing. I had a question about the bill, and I don't know if I'll defer to other members if they had questions of the testifier first, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Steele, is there a kind of a log book that they can buy, like your pilot's log? Otherwise, it's just a plain notebook or what?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman and Representative Leader, a person could buy a logbook. Truckers have logbooks. In the bill, it doesn't specify that it has to be, I guess it says logbook, but actually keeping a log could be something as simple as a piece of paper that had the time, dates, and places that were then attested to in accordance with the bill that the training had been received by the applicant. So, the logbook, if it's a term of art, I guess I'd ask for counsel on that. I did not necessarily mean that it had to be a logbook that you purchased, but a log of. Maybe the word should say a log rather than a log book.
If I may, sir,
Mr. Thon,
when I quit driver's training 5 years ago, in the back of the driver's manual there was an area back there to log in the hours that the student was doing at home. I don't know if it's under the new manual or not. I didn't get back that far when I was reading it. But I know it used to be in there, and they could check off the hours, the time, the minutes, or whatever, and the parents could initial it. That's when they did these, as they're behind the wheel.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bill.
Well, Representative Leader, Mr. Chairman, on line 2.2 it says, beginning in the middle of the line, it says, in a logbook or schedule certified. So that's actually kind of permissive language to do what I explained, in my estimation, a logbook as you, a book or a schedule, which a schedule could be something as simple as a piece of paper with the times, dates, and places on it. So I hope that answered your question.
Thanks.
Certainly interested in your counsel.
Yeah, thank you. I wasn't that objecting, but I thought, because they can, anybody, with these permits for driving at night, they just sign it, and I thought it would be a good idea if they had a, like the Mr. Zahn said, you log your, just as you do in your pilot log.
Correct.
Because otherwise somebody's going to sign a piece of paper and say he certifies that they're driving. But that's not a problem. I just was curious. I thought maybe there was some identification to it.
Thank you. Mr. Burris, do you have any thoughts on this? It seems like it worked itself out.
Mr. Chair, members, yeah, I think so. My read is that it's pretty broad. It would ultimately rest on the department to interpret that and possibly promulgate rules or at least set up some policies on what they would accept.
Thank you. I have a question for either Chair Dill or, and I think you had a question as well. Why don't you go first? Okay. Okay. On page 2, lines 19 and 20 through 21, is there a lot of fraud going on? Is there, do you have either parents not filling these out correctly, or how widespread is this issue? I mean, it seems like clearly something is going on out there, because that's the main part of what you're trying to address. Do we have evidence or sense of how widespread this is, this falsification problem?
Well, I'm a little older than this, but my dad was a doctor, and when it came time for me to get my driver's license, I walked into the front room after he came home from rounds at the hospital and said, Dad, I need you to sign this that says that you gave me the training so I can go downtown and get my driver's license. And that's what happened. And that was in the before I was a state representative, by the way. But so I suspect, long time before I was a state representative, I would suspect that I'd like to presume innocence before anything else, but I'm suspecting that in today's modern times, everyone is pinched for time, and that I'm suspecting that at least there's some of that. Maybe Mr. Zahn has a better knowledge of it, but I'm just telling you that over almost 35 years ago, that happened at the Dill household down in Indiana.
I've I was well aware of this all during the time. I've mentioned it several times to my boss, and he said, we just give them 30 hours, classroom, 6 hours, behind the wheel. We have no more to say about it. I do know of instances where, yes, individual kids had it signed off by the parents and never was documented, or the parents didn't have time to do it.
Mr. Chairman, I just, for the record, want to tell you that I received my pilot's license the day before I got my driver's license. So I was fairly, you get your pilot's license on your 16th birthday, and that was a little more important than getting the driver's license to me. So, I mean, it's just, I had quite a bit of training, and it does that requires a law book, that requires the testing by a certified flight instructor, so on and so forth. So when I first heard of the problem, I thought maybe we could move a little more towards some officialness in this. And so that was the genesis of the,
That's helpful. That clarifies things. Representative Ruth and then Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mrs. Arnn, I'm certainly sorry to hear that. As a grandma, I can relate to that. That's really awful. I think we're talking about private schools for driving. Would it also be for schools, I assume? And, I mean, private companies, but private for schools. And I'm just wondering about the additional cost, or if you've talked to schools at all on this.
Very few schools that I know of still give driver's training. There are some.
Oh, yeah.
I know after my two daughters got done taking it through the school in Ely, I had to go take them out and teach them how to drive. They were not getting it because they loaded the car up with three or four students and away they went. And so they didn't. They only had their study hall to do it in. So maybe one kid got 10 minutes, you know, at a time behind the wheel. I do know that when they got done with their driver's training in Ely School District, I had to take them out and teach them how to drive.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Dill.
In the amendment that we adopted at the very beginning of this, took out the provision on line 1.19 by an instructor licensed under the section 171.35. And so that really, by doing that amendment, that particular section requires licensing of each individual instructor. This would open it up so that the private companies that give instruction would also fall under this as amended, and it would make it so that it was far more permissive than just having the person licensed under that 171.35. And that actually came from the driver school. And actually, in full disclosure, there is going to obviously be additional cost to this. If a person goes to a private school, as what happens up on the range, they're obviously, if they're going to have to give 10 more hours of classroom and an additional 4 hours of behind the wheel, it isn't done by a parent, which this would, you know, also be allowed, there's going to be an additional cost. And actually that's considered by some to be a disincentive to have people actually get the license and wait till they're 18. Now, think back, members, because when you're 18, you can get a license. Think back, members, how excited you were to get your license when you were 16. So the question is there a balance between the need for additional training and the cost? I think that's really the question that ultimately will become before Chairman Leader's committee. Is the cost become a disincentive and make people wait till they're 18? Or is the value of that training between the time that they're 16 and 18 and the experience and the savings of life worth the cost? I mean, we weigh that here at the legislature every day.
Thank you. Follow up by Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Chair. And I'm just wondering how you got the 10 hours. I mean, why the difference? It's 25% more in training. It's just how you came up with the hours.
Mr. Chairman?
I
used an instructor who has worked in this field to come up with those numbers. And I have no experience in that except in terms of a pilot's license, it's required to have 40 hours of instruction in this. And so, I mean, I thought that sounded like a reasonable number. Actually, it's easier to be a pilot than drive. I don't know if you know that I rolled my SUV on the way down here 2 weeks ago. I haven't ever rolled an I've rolled an airplane, but it's on purpose.
Yeah.
So if you don't hit as many things when you're in the airplane as you do in a car. And I did have a traffic accident just recently, and so that's how I came up with the number. Mr. Zahn advised me on that.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Zahn.
Yes, there's definitely going to be a higher cost. Then what do we place on the value of training for our kids out here? You alluded to the article in the Star Tribune 2 weeks ago. Those numbers are astronomical of kids here in the state of Minnesota and throughout the United States of kids, teenagers being killed out here on the road. And most of that has to do with lack of training, lack of experience, just plain not paying attention to what's going on. They need to mature more. Some of them are good at it. They get them in and they're very good students. They've got a good driving record for most of their life. But some of them, there was one girl in Ely, she had got her driver's license, and within the first year she had wrecked 4 vehicles. Her father asked me, he said, "Dick, what can I do?" I said, "Why don't you try being a parent and taking that driver's license away from her?" Oh, he said, "I couldn't do that." And that's where we're at with parents and kids, I think.
I understand very well. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question was answered, I guess, earlier by Matt Burris, because the question was about what we're going to use for a logbook and how specific that was. But I just want to make a comment that, you know, we talk about getting our driver's license. I remember my father talking about it. He didn't have to take a test. He just mailed in an application, and he got it in the mail. And I know when I took my test, he wouldn't let me drive till he was comfortable, and I guess with my 3 sons, it was the same way when I took them. After they took the drivers, I had, again, like Mr. Zahn said, train them how to drive, and I wouldn't let them get to take their license until I was comfortable driving in the car with them, and which caused many arguments with my oldest anyway. He thought he was ready right away, but, and you're right, it's a parent responsibility having to make sure that they're safe and they know they can operate the vehicle before you let them go take that test.
Mr. Mandel. Well, the misdemeanor portion. You know, I can already hear Representative Rukavina saying we're going to make criminals out of we're going to make criminals out of parents. This is relatively serious. And if this bill didn't move forward, if there was one provision, and I think it's the cost part, and there's going to be somebody here, I believe there's someone here to testify on that issue that is currently in the business. But the part about the attesting to the training and making the parents a little bit more responsible, that is really important in this bill. I'm willing to debate at some point further down the road the idea of the extra training and the extra cost and whether that balances out and whether it's, but this, the rest of the bill is significant, really significant, that we have some, as Representative Nelson said, there was a debate in his own family whether the child was ready or not. So anyway, with that, thank you.
Are there any further questions? We have a couple of other testifiers, though.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So, is Jim Keenis?
Thank you.
Hines? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hines. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, James Fines, Mr. Chair, Chairman Bill, members, thank you. I promised to be both less passionate and less lengthy this time than I was last time I was in front of the committee. I'm the president of the Minnesota Driving School Association. I also own the largest driving school in the state. I'm involved in law enforcement in Washington County. I've been an EMT. I'm a first responder. I hit the full segment from training to helping ticket to treating to, I'm afraid, unfortunately, toe tagging people on the road. And I want to commend Chairman Dill for bringing a bill to try and increase the training and safety of teams on the road. We do have some concerns, and basically the concern revolves around cost. We believe that there's going to be some serious repercussions with maybe little benefit in increasing the classroom hours from 30 to 40. Increasing the classroom hours by 10 reduces a school's capacity for total students by about 30%, while increasing the teacher expense by about 33%. The owner of the school is going to have no choice but pass those costs back on to the students. Currently in the metro area, driver's training runs 329 to 325, or 425. With this increased classroom and behind-the-wheel training, we're going to be looking at approximately $700 to $800 driver's ed for teams, as the bill is currently written. Massachusetts has a 30 and 12 provision, and they're in between $800 and $900 for training. Even an increase of 3 hours in the classroom portion reduces capacity to school by about 10%. And again, that is going to be reflective in prices of $370 to $476. And I do have a copy of this for you to take with no appreciable benefit. We believe the current law of 30 hours of classroom is sufficient to teach all the classroom theory and the attitude adjustment, hopefully, that that teams need. Additional 10 hours we do not feel is warranted in this case. The other aspect of this bill, though, is the 10 hours behind the wheel. In a behind the wheel lesson, a student doesn't have the ability to either zone out or not pay attention. This is where learning is real world, real time, and 100% applicable. I, like Sherman Dill, am a private pilot, and I know what it was like for me when I was taking my pilot's training, and gone with a logbook and having everything documented. The one step that a certified flight instructor has to do that we cannot do, as it was alluded by Mr. Zong, and I, sorry for your loss, sir. I've been there when people have had that loss, and I'm also a grandparent, so I can feel that. I would say, though, that getting back to our thing, on balance, most students probably would benefit from another lesson or two. Lessons are 2 hours long. Another lesson or two would probably have a positive impact on most students. The thing with students is we get students in the car, and Mrs. Ogg probably had the same thing, that you got them in the car and you taught them very little because their parents did such a darn good job of training them. You get other students in the car and it was like drive them to a parking lot because they hadn't been in with their parents. Or they even didn't have any drive time in between your last lesson and this one, which we require. But you can't force parents to do this. So on average, I think another behind the wheel lesson, another 2 hours would be good. It wouldn't put an undue burden on the school. It wouldn't raise prices anything other than what is definable and tangible. Now, this cost benefit would be definable, the extra behind the wheel time. It would be tangible to the students, to the parents, and to the school. Now a 38-8 package, realistically, is going to run costs from $414 to $520 in the metro area. That's what driver's ed is going to go up by. It's going to go up by anywhere from $75 to $95 is what the additional cost is going to be. I think that is manageable by most people. An additional 4 hours, if we're looking at a 30 and 10 program, you're going to look at $500 to $615 for a program. Adding behind the wheel time would be a far greater bang for the buck than adding classroom time. I'm almost done here. With these prices, we know currently there's teams out there that wait till they're 18, and I think more teams would wait till they're 18 and not get any formal training. We also know there's teams out there that drive with no license because they don't have the funds or choose not to do driver's ed and We can't legislate following the law. We also know that many families are struggling in Minnesota and may just flat out put this off. We see kids taking the bus to class and taking the bus home. We know kids that have to wait an hour for their parents to pick them up. Additional class time would make additional wait to get picked up. My organization, Minnesota Driving School Association, believes the surest way to increase teen safety is to have stiffer graduated license requirements, make mandatory, make the seatbelt law a primary offense so that people can get pulled over for it. We are in favor of the balance of the bill. We'd like the idea of a testing tool log. I would love to have that so it isn't filled out the night before and somebody attests to it, because how are you ever going to prove it's not true? But I would like, for the last thing I'll say is I would love to get to a point where our instructors actually sign off, like a flight instructor, to say, this person is ready to take this test. We don't have that ability. Like Mrs. Ogg testified to, we have to give them they do the seat time, we have to give them the card. And we only have one little tool, and I'm sure Mrs. Ogg knows about this. We have a little code right on the bottom. Sometimes we'll put on a white card that says MMR, and that's just a heads up for the examiner. And that means meets minimal requirements. And sometimes then the examiner can look at that and be careful, because a lot of times you're out on the real road with this student, and we're letting them know that this person may have more challenges on the road. I certainly wanted to take questions. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Times. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if there's another witness, if there's somebody from the Office of Traffic Safety testifying, or if this is
the
last.
Well, that's on the list, but we certainly can call them.
Well, I'll ask the question of the testifier, and if he doesn't know the answer, maybe the Office of Traffic Safety will know the answer. Do you know how we compare to other states in the number of hours that we require in a classroom and behind the wheel?
We are very, very equal to most of the nation. There's very, very few states that have a greater provision than us. There are a number of states that have a far lesser provision, such as allowing students to do it online with no supervision at all. At least now we still have an active instructor supervising the children, making sure that they're doing the study guides and watching the videos and such. But we're in the mainstay of, I believe there's 30 or 30 some states that have a 30 or 6. 36 really is the model, is the standard across the nation.
Representative Horvath, a follow-up?
Just the reason I asked was because since our teen death numbers are so much higher than the national average, you know, I guess that's not the factor. So then we have to look at other things. I know we talked about it a little bit last week, the graduated driver's license, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it more. But we have to look at what is it that's different about Minnesota that could be causally related to the increased death rate we have.
Very good observation. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's Mr.
Fine.
Mr. Vine signs, yes. So I'm hearing you right, and I just correct me. You're saying classroom, you think there's enough classroom, but you think that more behind the wheel part of that part of the bill you would support, and then the part of the bill with more verifiable, the 50 hours with the parents, would be better. You support that part of the bill, but you're just saying that behind the wheel or the classroom, that would be cost prohibitive possibly for some students and or difficult to do provide because of the number of extra hours it would take.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson. The 30 hours I think is sufficient for the theory and law part of the training, and the additional hours. If we're going to put different additional expenses on Minnesota families for this training, I think the real world behind the wheel training is by far the most tangible, applicable training that we can be doing. And to touch on Representative Hortman's point, I think the difference between Minnesota and the rest of the country when it comes to teen deaths, I think, is related to our lack of restrictions on provisional license holders. We can't increase or quicken the brain maturity. And that's where brain maturity is where most of this is at. With with teens. We can't stop them from all of a sudden becoming distracted. I could give somebody 70 hours of behind-the-wheel training. They're still has the possibility of being distracted at that any given moment in time. We all are distracted from any moment in time. When have you ever looked up and went, oh, whatever, and hit your brakes and almost hit somebody? We've all done it. And distractions are just a terrible part of this. Ms. Driving.
Ms. Chairman.
Yes.
While talking on the cell phone.
Honest
man.
Hey.
And Ms. Chairman, I'd just like to point out that on line 3.1, starting on line 3.1, we changed that section C to tighten up on provisional driver's licenses in the instance of where someone, the way this bill is drafted, that if they had a moving violation, that then they would be prohibited from getting a driver's license until they're 18. And I'm certain that my 16-year-old who did not get, he's 18, he never got an accident or a ticket during that period of time, that he would have been kind of seriously thinking about that part of the law as he, even though he would have successfully completed it and not been penalized under this provision as proposed. It's something to think about. I mean, in this case, it's something to lose. And I'm finding that teens are usually motivated by something that they might lose, like their text messaging.
Good point. Are there any other members? I think Elmer Otto interested in his Mr. Otto here. Okay.
Thank you very much.
And this is the just by way of announcement, this is the last person that has indicated that they're interested in testifying on this bill, but if there are others, please let us know. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Otto, and thank you for your correspondence on a variety of issues over the years.
No, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Fred Schreiber.
Oh, Fred Schreiber.
I'm sorry. I'm representing the Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association. Ours is an organization of Minnesota high school driver educators. And I'm here to support House File 2460. The very first high school driver education course in America was developed by Amos Neihardt and was offered in 1933 at State College High School in Pennsylvania. The concept spread very quickly. Within just 3 or 4 years, Leslie Silvernail in the Cleveland, Ohio Public Schools was coordinating driver education in conjunction with the physical education program with 30 hours of classroom and 6 hours of actual driving. The first national conference on driver education was held in 1949. Neihardt and Silvernail recognized the need for standards. Silvernail suggested 30 hours and 6, and that became the norm. However, both men stated later that was the worst thing they ever did. They both advocated a two-course driver education program with considerable driving between the two courses. But 30 and 6 is still with us today, 59 years later. During that time, the freeway system has been initiated, developed, and expanded. The entire highway transportation system, roadways, vehicles, and the people who use the roads have increased dramatically. And in the case of roadways and vehicles at least, they have become much more complex. In addition, our state rightfully has mandated that the classroom phase must include increased emphasis on alcohol and other drugs and how they affect the driving task, emphasis on school bus awareness and driver behavior relative to those buses, seatbelt safety seat requirements, railroad crossings, organ donation, and the great need for organ donors. We believe that increasing class time is long overdue. 40 hours of classroom would be great, but any number of added classroom hours would be valuable. 36 or even 33 required as a minimum would be a big improvement. We believe that the minimum behind the wheel time should be expanded for basically the same reasons. The roadways themselves, the signs, signals, roadway markings, all take getting used to, and becoming comfortable with and reacting and responding correctly, rapidly, and efficiently to whatever occurs on the roadway is essential. The high volume of traffic demands quicker perception, clear thinking, and reacting, making the correct decision, and then taking the appropriate action. Adding behind-the-wheel time should result in young drivers being better able to meet the driving challenges and to drive successfully. The bill mandates a minimum of 10 hours behind the wheel, but any additional hours beyond the current 6 would be a step in the right direction. We also support wholeheartedly paragraph 5, which mandates at least 50 hours rather than 30 of supervised driving practice. I used to tell my students and the parents, the more practice, the better. 100 to 200 hours is not too much. According to the Governor's Highway Safety Association, 40 states require supervised driving practice. 2 states require 20 hours. Minnesota is one of 6 requiring 30. 1 state requires 35 hours. 9 states require 40. 21 states require 50. And 2 states require 60. It's time that Minnesota moves forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to answer any questions if
yes.
there are any?
And thank you, Mr. Schreiber, and my apologies for...
I would like to make one more comment, though.
Sure.
The logbook question came up, and I can't speak to scientific evidence, but plenty of anecdotal evidence. The kids for many years thought it was a joke. And regarding the cost, certainly driver education costs, and doing this would cost more. But in the St. Paul paper this morning, there was a little article that said every year traffic crashes cost Americans more than $160 billion every year, and that amounts to $1,051 for everybody in the country every year. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, my apologies for not getting your name right the first time. So members, any questions or additional discussion of the author? A lot to chew on here. Anyone else from the public interested in testifying on House File 2460?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Well, I just want to thank Mr. Zahn. I mean, everyone knows in this room that in Ely, as Ely goes, so goes the nation. And so I'd like to thank him for thinking about the this thing and tell him I'm sorry about his loss. I knew his granddaughter. They're all constituents of mine. And the bill as it's written, members, is a starting point, maybe not an ending point. But I think from hearing from the schools and from some citizens and that we need to take a look at this. So if this bill is the vehicle to, as a pun, the vehicle to get some new direction, then so be it. And I want to thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Chair Dill. And with that, I'll renew my motion to have House File 2460 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Transportation Finance Committee. All those... Okay, with recommended re-referral to Public Safety Policy, but that would be after it goes to the Finance Committee. Okay, All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. The motion prevails. So thank you very much, Representative Dill, for a good discussion. And with that, members, we before I move adjournment, I just wanted to remind people that we have another meeting scheduled for next Wednesday, the 12th. Now, my understanding from our excellent committee administrator is that the bills keep on coming. And that means, because my policy is to try to hear as many as possible, that we may have to schedule one additional meeting before deadline. And it'll probably be this Friday morning. So we will get back to you about that. And also make sure that you have next Thursday on your calendar starred, because that will be the day that we mark up our omnibus policy bill. So if you have bills that you still have in your head that you want to get jacketed, I would give you 24 hours. But we're really reaching the point where the capacity of our staff is and ability to put things on the schedule are extremely limited. So I'm going to put people on notice here. Yes, Representative Hortman.
Can you say Friday morning? What time do you generally think of morning being?
Enough time to get in from Brooklyn Park.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I will likely not be here that day, but hopefully Representative Medora will be able to. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, Representative Portman, you may be chairing that meeting.
Rock and roll. We'll start before 9.
All right. With that, members, we stand adjourned.